You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Red Sox On Deck Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Osgood. Joining me, as she will every week this season, is Shelley Verstraete. Shelley, happy opening day. How's everything going for you today?
It's great. There are so many baseball games on today. I took off work so I could just, you know, just sit back and relax and just watch baseball, you know, pretty much, you know, all day. And I just love how, you know, Jake is not here, right? You know, the boss is not here. And we could just, you know, play around and, you know, just like talk about baseball and just do whatever.
We're finally free. I totally agree with you. And we have new theme music and, you know, it's April now. We're ready to go. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the first note that we had here was opening day thoughts, because we thought we were going to have a baseball game today in Boston, and we didn't. It got rained out. Now, I work about 2 miles from Fenway Park, and it stopped raining at 10 a.m., and it never rained again today. So, you know, not ideal, not thrilled, but do you have any opening day thoughts outside of Boston? Anything that you saw on your day off that you wanted to throw out there?
I just assumed that it was raining up there. I follow a couple of people, obviously, who live in Boston and then also live in New York, and I kind of know that's kind of sort of close. I mean, I live in Virginia, so I'm, you know, way far away. So I'm just like, oh, it must be raining. But yeah, when you told me, you know, prior to recording that it didn't rain all day. I'm like, well, dang it. Like, I, you know, we could have watched, you know, Ivaldi and John Means today, but that's okay. We'll get them on Friday.
That's right.
And, you know, now we have, you know, a 3-game stack instead of 1 and 2. It's okay. It was just kind of a bummer that, you know, you work yourself up to just totally have opening day. And then,
yeah, no, that's a bummer. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure they did it in advance for anyone that was heading in. You don't want to send everybody in on opening day and then have to bring them back another day. But, you know, not great. But we will move on. So the first thing that we were going to talk about today has to do with a prospect that we've hit on a couple of the March episodes, and that's Tanner Houck. He's going to be getting a week one start. He'll be starting the second game scheduled for Saturday. And that's going to be because Eduardo Rodriguez is starting the season on the DL, so Houck gets a start early on. Any thoughts on that? We didn't really know if that was going to be happening based off of his first couple of starts. So what do you think about Houck getting the second game of the season, Shelley?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of surprising. If you would have asked me about this about like 2 weeks ago or something, but I mean, I totally get it, you know, with Rodriguez's injury or dead arm or whatever. I think that this is kind of like an easy transition for Houck because, you know, in the early spring, he was kind of wild and erratic. But that last start, he was very crisp. He, you know, he got a lot of strikeouts. It was a really good start. So him, you know, facing Baltimore for his first start, I think it's going to be a nice, easy transition. I don't know how long we're going to see him for. You know, I'm kind of hoping that Erod's dead arm is just, you know, kind of one of those things that we kind of hear about. It's about like a 2-week thing, and then he's like totally fine. So I don't know how much we're actually going to see from Houck at the beginning of the season. But I mean, if you're going to face Baltimore at your first start, that there are, you know, a lot more worse clubs to face.
Yeah, and one of those clubs is Atlanta, who he faced in his final outing. As you mentioned, the control was better. Only walked 1 in 4 1/3 innings. Struck out 6, including Acuna, Freeman, and Ozuna, who he faced in the first inning. Was throwing 97. Was throwing his slider that, it, you know, is arguably his best pitch, and was working in his splitter. It sounded like all three pitches looked good. And again, 1 walk, 6 Ks, 4 1/3. So maybe they'll even be able to get 5 innings out of him in his first start. Like you said, Baltimore is lower leverage for his first outing. Not as much as the end of the season last year, where the games really didn't matter. So a little more pressure, but I think it's great. It'll be good to see him, even if it's just for that one start before he gets sent back down. If Rodriguez is ready, it'll be good to know what we have with a little more pressure than he was throwing last season. So,
yeah.
All right. So kind of early on today, we're going to be talking later about some prospects at the lowest of levels, the Gulf Coast League, Dominican Summer League. We're going to be hitting on Blaze Jordan for sure, and a few other prospects. So, you know, that'll be later on in the show. We wanted to start by talking about a piece in The Athletic, and it is a podcast that Theo Epstein joined with Jason Stark and Doug Glanville on The Athletic baseball podcast. So they have a new show that's going to feature different guests throughout the week all year, and we'll link to that in the episode notes. But there were a lot of things that we talked about a couple of weeks ago that had to do with potential rules changes. And you can go back and listen to that episode, exactly what rules are going to be tested out at which levels. And some of them are for half the year, having to do with pickoff attempts and stolen bases and the shift. All of those things we talked about a little bit, but kind of some takeaways for me was just kind of how open-minded Theo is going to be. It seems like he's a great advisor to the commissioner, in that he's listening to a lot of feedback from the fans, knowing that the games are a little bit too long, and that it's becoming a bit pitching dominant with the three outcomes. And there's just more and more three outcomes, and a lot of these things with the strikeouts have nearly doubled over the last 10, 20, 30 years as you look back. Theo talked about how the rules were made in 1890, so many of the rules, the dimensions of the field. And, you know, I might not have the stats exact, but he talked about if you move the mound back 1 foot, that even that 100th of a second that the batter has more would essentially take a 1.5 miles per hour away from the fastball on the pitcher. So anyone that's throwing 100 would be throwing 98.5, right? And this isn't unprecedented. They lowered the mound after 1968, which was a season where famously Bob Gibson had a 1.12 ERA. So it's not like this is that drastic of a move, but it's something that I thought was the most interesting possible rule that we hadn't heard. That's not in place yet, but it was something that Theo threw out there as a possibility. And you know, 1/100th of a second seems like nothing. You know, it was interesting to kind of hear how much that would affect the hitter's reaction time. So, Shelley, I didn't know if you had any thoughts on the article or about moving the mound or really anything.
Yeah, I mean, I did read the article and I thought it was like really great. And just knowing that, Theo at least has, you know, a voice in the ear of the commissioner, and we saw in the lower levels that they're trying some of these things out, you know, like the shifts and the robo umps and all this stuff. And I honestly think that that is a good place to actually try this out, you know, see what works, see what doesn't work. But I just love how honest, you know, just reading the article, how honest Theo was just actually talking about, you know, how much he likes the game. He wants the game to be better. He's not saying that the game is, you know, trash right now. He's just like, it could probably be better because there, like you said, there are way too many three true outcomes. Strikeout, walk, like home run, like it's just too much of that. And Theo's just like, yeah, I just want some more balls in play. And I think, you know, us as like baseball fans, I really do think that we do want a little bit more action. I mean, yeah, home runs and strikeouts are nice, but sometimes you just want more, you know, action. And I just really like how honest Theo was about talking about, you know, talking about everything. And hopefully, while I disagree with some of these things that they're doing in the minor leagues, they're trying things, and I'm fine with them trying things, just seeing how it goes.
Yeah, and, you know, if there's home runs and strikeouts all game long, they don't become as exciting, if that's really all the game has become. Exactly what you said there. You know, they're trying things out, and they're seeing what happens. It might be that they overcompensate a little bit. The shift rules might be a little bit too aggressive, and it might have unintended consequences. And that's what he kept talking about. If we see those unintended consequences at lower levels, well, maybe we can move it back a little bit and not go as drastic by the time that it gets to the major leagues. You know, he talked about specific plays. He talked about triples. He talked about doubles, and specifically stolen bases, which you can tell comes up a lot with the pickoff changes, the larger bases that they're trying out. You know, same thing, a small size of the base means that you are closer to the next base, and that split second play might have a higher percentage of stolen bases, which could encourage people to steal bases more often. We talked about it a couple weeks ago with the pitch clock. Everybody that he talks to that plays in games with pitch clocks in the minor leagues, it sounds like the majority, they like it, they get used to it. So I really think, and that's been the most important thing for me personally, is that you go to a minor league game and you see how quicker the games are and they move, and you know, you don't go over a minute without a pitch being thrown. So it seems like he just wants to have the ball in play more often, more pitches being thrown at a faster rate, and I'm all for that. The last thing that was, it was kind of a subtle reference that he made, had to do with replay, and Jason Stark and Glanville had referenced that a little bit, you know, holding a tag for an extra split second while a player is sliding into a base, and when you slow it down, you can see that they came off the base. That's not really the spirit of the rule. I think that's the worst of all of the replay rules to the point that I almost want to throw replay completely out of the game if we're going to be doing that. So he said that, you know, that they're going to be looking at replay and that play was referenced when he was talking about it. And you can tell that he's not a huge fan of really micromanaging the replay system. So I didn't know what you thought about that or any of that with the pitch clock as well.
Yeah, I'm all for a pitch clock. I mean, I you know, prior to, you know, COVID, I frequent a lot of, you know, minor league games and AFL games where they have the pitch clock. And it's really nice because, I mean, just having just some type of time limit just to move the game along, it really helps things. And you know, as you said, pitchers don't really seem to mind it. Just once they realize, you know, how many ever seconds it is, it's not really that bad. They have enough time to you know, do whatever they need to do, take a deep breath, think about what they need to do. Mm-hmm. It's enough time. So I really do love them just pushing the pitch clock. And yeah, I agree with you about the instant replay rules. While I like it, I do not like it when it's like for like stolen bases or stuff and you're looking for someone to just pop up just because of, you know, physics. Like when you hit something, you're gonna
right.
pop up.
Well, they teach you the pop-up slide when you're growing up.
100%. So it's like that's yeah. So I like that they're also looking at that as well, because there's just really no way that you can just, you know, slide and stick it. There is really no way.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, we're advertising someone else's podcast there, but I definitely recommend giving it a listen. They had Theo on for, I think, close to an hour, and he just had a ton to say. He was super honest just about, like you said, you know, the game is great. It's not like it's a total disaster, but you can't act like it is the best version of the game. And it's not, you know, it's not the same version of the game and doesn't have as much you know, ball and play and just the length of games in general that we had when we were growing up and going to games. So it definitely can get better. I think he's the perfect person to have as an advisor there. I doubt that he actually wants the commissioner job and everything that goes along with that, but he's the perfect person to have there, and he has had, you know, success at multiple franchises now, so it's hard to really question his ideas. So I think we're heading in the right direction there. All right. So moving along, we're going to talk today about kind of the levels that are below low A. And I think just understanding what these levels are, you hear about rookie leagues, you know, how many teams are there? When do they play? How many games do they play? And who is there? Obviously, we've hit on AAA, AA, High A, and Low A over the last 4 weeks. This will be the last rundown that we do. We're not going to go through every single one of these teams, but we figured we would combine the Gulf Coast Red Sox teams and the Dominican Summer League teams into one episode and hit on a few players there. With the rookie league, there are potentially, it looks like there's going to be 2 Gulf Coast Red Sox teams and 2 Dominican Summer League Red Sox teams. So you'll hear that the Dominican Summer League is abbreviated as the DSL. So, you know, if we reference that, that's just short for the Dominican Summer League. With the Gulf Coast Red Sox, they've been playing at JetBlue Park, which is, you know, Fenway South, where they have the spring training games. They've been playing there since 2012. That league is based in Florida. There is another league in Arizona. So very similar to how spring training works. You know, you'll hear that there are players that are around for extended spring training through April in normal years. And then normally from mid-June to late August is the season down there. So you hear us talk about short season leagues. These are the two that have short seasons. The recent draftees come up after the June draft. A lot of times get sent right to the Gulf Coast, especially if they are You know, prep bats, high school, younger players usually will get sent there for a short season a couple of weeks after they're drafted and hopefully signed. They'll have 30-man rosters. There are different age requirements. You can only have so many players over the age of 20 or over the age of 21. Same thing with service time. You can't stay at these levels for 3-4 years. So it's usually going to be the first and possibly second year of your service time that you would be at either of these levels. So, you know, it's usually the first year of professional baseball, whether it's recent draftees or international players from the July 2nd signings, or possibly a player who might start at the Dominican Summer League and then get called up to the Gulf Coast League, the Gulf Coast Red Sox team from there after starting in the DSL. Historically, they've played 56 games. Hopefully that's what they'll do again this year in the Gulf Coast. And then just shifting to the DSL Red Sox, it's also part of the rookie league franchises. They play at El Toro Complex in the Dominican Republic. That is now the only Latin America-based rookie league. Same kind of thing, starts in June, earlier June, I believe, and the last time they played went to August 24th. So it's the same, off by a week or so, type of schedule, June to August, and then they'll have their playoffs at the end of August into the beginning of September. And then from there, you kind of see where everyone's at and whether they're going to be assigned to any fall leagues from there. So before we start off with who we're showcasing today, did I miss anything there, Shelley? Anything that you wanted to add?
No. I mean, you totally covered that. I will be interested to see if those dates still kind of work, you know, with like COVID and stuff. I mean, you've really covered it well.
All right, sounds good. So we're going to start off with Blaze Jordan. And he was the third round pick in the 2020 draft by the Red Sox. Shelley, we'll let you start this one off and then I can fill in from there.
Yeah. This was a very interesting signing. I remember watching the draft, and we took Nick York as, you know, a shocker in the first round. Like, I will be honest, I had no idea who Nick York was when he was selected. I'm like, who is this? So we kind of used the savings to sign Nick York to go after Blaze Jordan. Blaze Jordan is basically a super a power bat. He won the high school home run derby back in 2019, so prior to when he was drafted. But power is his game. He has plus power potential. He has when you watch his swing, it's a very natural loft. Like, you just watch it, it's just, you could just see how it goes. And he's so, so strong. Even, you know, even that he's like 18 years old, he is so, so strong. So that is like really awesome. That amount of power. Unfortunately, I mean, he was drafted as a third baseman, but I really think that he's going to be a first baseman or DH. He doesn't move well. He's just like your prototypical bopper, right?
Yep.
So I'm a little bit down on, you know, kind of Blaze like himself, because I just need to see more of it. Like, I'm afraid that there would be a little bit too much swing and miss. You know, just because he's so young and he's just, he doesn't really move well. I don't know. But I mean, he had a really interesting like instructs league. Like in fall instructs, he had like a really kind of like down part, like the first part, but he was like really starting to really swing it and really hit the ball well towards the latter part. So I'm really, really excited to see him when he, you know, first gets going down on the GCL. To see what we have here, because he really could be someone really, really interesting, or he could flame out. Like, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, Blaze could go. But yeah, so what are your thoughts on Blaze
here?
Yeah,
I think that was a great recap. I'll just kind of add a couple of things. I mean, the raw power, what you see in batting practice, is off the charts. And everyone we're going to be talking about today is 17, 18 years old. When they drafted Jordan, he was 17, and they're going off of things that they saw when he was 16. So it's so tough with any of these players to know what direction they're going to go. Last week we said there's just so much projection and different paths they could take. There's even more when you're talking about players that could still be in high school at this age. And he reclassified his class to get, he was drafted a year earlier, based off of kind of this reclassification. He was expected to be drafted the year after. Was probably going to be going to college, but like you said, they drafted him in the third round. He was an over slot where they paid him a solid signing bonus to sign. But yeah, I mean, the pros are, along with his age, this exit velocity. When he was 16 years old, he had a wooden bat that was 106.9 miles per hour for an exit velocity, which is unheard of for a 16-year-old. So the bat speed, the exit velocity, the raw power, like what he possesses with that size is through the roof. But, you know, will the hit tool be there? As a first baseman, a likely first baseman that hits right-handed, you have to hit. And, you know, that's a profile that there's more of that than anyone else. So it takes a lot to make the league with that profile. So he'll have to hit. There's a higher risk. It sounds like he is kind of maxed out body wise. He's 6'2", he's 220 at that age. So there isn't he can't get a whole lot bigger from there. And in fact, he actually, I think, wanted to lose weight to try to continue to play third base. I think the goal is to be a third baseman. And if that doesn't work out, you know, go as far as you can with that. And you always have the first base, profile to fall back on. In reading some of the, in terms of the defense, it sounds like when he has played first base, he has good hands over there. So it doesn't sound like he would be a defensive liability if he ends up at first base. There's some, you know, first basemen who really are just hit and you're kind of hiding them on defense. It sounds like he has good hands. And it's just going to be a matter of, can he hit advanced pitching? We haven't seen it yet. There's no reason to think that he can't, but you know, we'll wait and see, and hopefully we'll know a lot more at the end of this season.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about a couple of outfielders, and you know, with Jordan, he is on most lists, Red Sox prospect lists. He's in the top 20. We've found a few other names that we want to highlight that we think are interesting, but we obviously don't know a ton about them yet. We haven't seen any of these players play on video, or they haven't at least had more than a few games, whether it's in the Dominican leagues or stateside. So we're going to hit on a couple of outfielders and a couple of pitchers before we get out of here. So Shelly, do you want to start with outfielder Miguel Blaise?
Yeah, so this was our, you know, the Red Sox big J2 signing this year. He was ranked 20th on Baseball America and 21st on MLB Pipeline. You know, and this guy, this kid, honestly, he's 17 right, years old, right? So I no one has really seen him. So I'm just basically kind of like recapping what, you know, Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com has said really about this guy. But I mean, he is like one of the best athletes in the class. He's big, he's strong, he's very powerful, he's very speedy, he's very, very athletic, very, very toolsy. So this is a really interesting guy to watch going forward. I think that he might start in the DSL next year. I don't know. But he has a long, large, strong frame, a lot of projection. Again, he's only 17, very athletic. He has above average bat speed. This is definitely a guy to watch. And this was, again, like our biggest, you know, J2 signing this year. Yeah, so I'm really excited to see, just get some video, because it was really hard to even find video on this kid. So I'm just really excited just to see anything that we see from him, because he sounds very, very exciting.
I'm Alex Rodriguez. And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there. Looking forward to seeing that. The outfielder that I was going to talk about at this level was Eduardo Lopez, and he is a center fielder, 18 years old. You know, again, these players are born 2002, 2003. It was most interesting to read the profile from Fangraphs from Eric Loggenhagen, who was, so he is a their top 2018 J2 signee. He is a switch hitter, and there, if you can have a kind of higher floor player that is at an age as young as Lopez is, this, it sounds like this is that. He has a lot of projectable, possibly, you know, 50 to 55 grades if everything works out, as a hitter, as a runner, as a fielder. And those are all, you know, a great kind of base to have, along with being a switch hitter. So if you throw switch hitter, ability to run, good instincts in the field, and pretty good raw power, it just comes down to whether they're going to hit. And we really don't know whether any of these players are going to be able to hit and hit advanced pitching. And sometimes you don't know for a couple of years. But he described him as a high probability teenager, if that exists. Hit pretty well in fall instructs last year. So he kind of handled his first assignment there. But good defensive instincts could potentially be a center fielder, which is always good to hear, and might just kind of be someone who has all of the different tools. It'll be interesting to see whether he'll be able to hit as he moves up. So that is Eduardo Lopez. And after that, we're going to talk about a couple of pitchers. Bradley Blaylock, Shelley, starting presumably at the Gulf Coast League this year.
Yeah, Blaylock is a really interesting guy. He just turned 20. He was born on Christmas, so that's pretty cool. I wonder if he got like birthday presents and Christmas presents. Anyway, yeah. So Blaylock is, you know, a 6'2", righty. He has, you know, a low to mid 90s fastball with a slider and curveball. He participated in fall instructs back in 2019 and 20. There could be many different ways that Blake can go. If he reaches his ceiling, he's probably going to be like a back end type, but most likely he's just going to be like a long man, maybe some guy out of the bullpen. Scouts have really, really liked his demeanor, you know, his swagger coming off the mound. You know, he participated in fall instructs in 19 and 20. He was one of the youngest pitchers in both years there. So that's really interesting. To get in, you know, invited to instructs being one of the youngest pitchers, like, obviously, you know, the team really likes you, right? Yep. So that's a really good.
Yeah, no, it's a great sign.
Exactly. So he kind of got off to a slow start this year, but he was, you know, he's still working on his delivery. So that started to, like, come around towards the end of camp. You know, so that's something really good. I will be watching him just to see if we're going to get, like, the number 4, number 5 type of starter, or are we getting a reliever, you know. But this guy is definitely someone to keep your eye on. I definitely think that he can definitely make the majors at some point, whether it's a starter or reliever.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks. That was Bradley Blaylock. And the last pitcher that I was going to talk about today is Luis Perales, a 17-year-old, soon to be 18-year-old pitcher, right-handed pitcher. From Venezuela, and they signed, the Red Sox signed him for $75,000 in 2019, and really kind of came out of nowhere once, you know, after the signing later that year. And I remember I want to say it was 2 years ago now, seeing him for the first time in an Alex Speer article in the Globe. He was throwing 95 miles an hour with movement at age 16, which is just that's a whoa type of thing to see in print at that age. Throwing 95, he's 6'1", 160, throwing 95 at 16 years old. For me, that was all I needed to know to at least be intrigued. You know, reading some of the reports, you know, Sox prospect guys believe that he's a sleeper with starter potential and a high upside arm. And talking about the SoxProspects.com website is kind of their summary with him, that high upside, obviously wide range at 17, soon to be 18 years old. But, you know, they kind of have had the same, you know, file that away, intriguing arm. Will be interesting to see as he adds projection, as he adds strength, what we'll see from Perales. He also has a curveball that is in the mid-70s with spin and break and considered advanced for his age. So this is a real, really high potential pitcher that I see for someone at his age. Again, you're looking at someone that is 5-6 years away if everything goes in the right direction. So, but I thought it was an interesting name to file away. Ever since I saw that a couple of years ago, I've been looking forward to seeing him pitch. Unfortunately, we didn't last year, but with Luis Perales from Venezuela, he'll probably be starting in the DSL this year, and I'm interested to see what he has to offer.
Yeah, 100%. I'm really excited to see him too. Oh, I can't wait for minor league baseball to start. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great kind of transition into the fact that today is April 1st. We have covered every level, and the first games are going to be on May 4th, so 5 weeks from now. We are open to any ideas, any players that we didn't hit on that you were hoping to get a breakdown of, any topics, any questions. You can reach either of us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is BobOsgood15. Shelley's is Shelley_643. We have some ideas and things that we want to talk about throughout the month of April. But if you have any players, any thoughts, anything that we might have touched on a little bit that you want us to go more in depth on, please send that in. We're happy to hear that. Shelley, anything that you want to add for this exciting month of no minor league baseball we'll be discussing?
Yeah, it will be a very interesting month. Yeah, I'm just excited to just kind of get this, you know, show really off the ground now that Jake's left, and we can just take this wherever we want it to go. So it should be a really fun month.
Yep, the freedom is great. Yeah. And we are going to be looking ahead to the draft a little bit. We'll talk about that probably in a couple of episodes. So I know that we see a lot of the questions out there. The Red Sox have the 4th pick this year, so it's an interesting year, more so than normal with the draft. So we're going to talk about that a little bit and look ahead as the draft is in June, just a couple months away. So, all right, that's it for today. Thank you everyone for listening. If you enjoy this show, please leave us a 5-star review, on whatever platform you're listening on, and we'll talk to you next week.